Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, November the 24th. And today we're going to chat with our friend George Rodriguez. You know, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to look back at what happened this week, 55 years ago, with the assassination of President Kennedy here in Dallas, but also what happened literally 55 years ago today, November 24th, 1963, when the American people watching television saw an assassination, the assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald, or the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald by Jack Ruby. So, you know, recollect a little bit on that entire episode. Obviously, George and I were boys when this happened, but nevertheless, these type of things you don't forget, no matter how young you are. I happened to have been in Cuba when this was going on, so my perspective was more limited because we didn't have access to the same information that they had up here. In fact, most of what we were hearing was over the radio, over the Voice of America. But nevertheless, you know, later on, of course, I was able to watch the video. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about the caravan and some interesting developments on the caravan. Just a quick note, take a look at what's happening in Paris. There is a real problem in Paris. People are out in the streets. Mr. Macron, who a year and a half or so ago was the darling of the American media, he was going to be the French Obama. Well, I think Mr. Macron is learning how difficult it is to raise gasoline prices in the name of climate change. I just hope that American politicians watch what's going on in Paris. How are you, George? Happy Thanksgiving. I'm sure you've eaten too much, but join the rest of us who have done the same thing.
Yep, I've overdone it on football and on turkey.
Well, I think you and me and just about everybody else, congratulations to those Cowboys for beating the Redskins. Wasn't that great?
It was. I thought they really handled the Redskins very, very well.
I felt
bad for poor Colt McCoy having a terrible homecoming there to Texas, but it's always great when the Cowboys win.
I agree with you. They're still a very popular team. And, you know, the one thing about the Cowboys, and the reason I guess I continue to like them, is because they stand up for the flag.
Yep.
And that's the message of Jerry Jones. He made that very clear that in his team they were going to stand up for the flag. And I thought that was kind of cool. You know, the old days when there was a flag and people standing up for it, nobody kneeling, nobody, and on the Redskins either. No, everybody stood up, which is a good thing, George. I think that's smart.
I think it was very smart, especially on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, that's right, with a huge audience. Well, anyway, I wanted to talk today, as I mentioned, about our memories of this day 55 years ago. I mentioned that, you know, you can be young, but these things are tough to forget when you have events like this that happen that everybody's tuned into. But let me begin with the caravan. Obviously, you have a wonderful seat to all of this down in South Texas because it's a heck of a lot closer to you, and you can feel this in a way that most people cannot who don't live in South Texas. But right now there's a breaking story here in the last hour or so, and it's one of these situations where we believe it to be true, but you know, again, you never know until it's official. But it appears that the Trump administration and the incoming López Obrador administration have made a deal that these people will remain in Mexico, George. The asylum seekers, or the caravan people, will remain in Mexico while they're being processed. Two reactions, George, and I want to get yours as well, but two reactions from me here. Number one, it shows me that that López Obrador wants to work with President Trump. He doesn't want to get into a fight with President Trump over this issue, number one. He's pragmatic, in other words. And that confirms what everybody had told me about him when he was the mayor in Mexico City. He was a pretty pragmatic guy. But number two, George, I think this is effectively the end of the caravans. If they're going to have to stay in Mexico, they're not going to stay in Mexico because they're never going to get into Mexico, George.
That's right. I agree 100%. Earlier this week, We saw that Mexico turned two of their caravans around. They turned one back on Tuesday, and then on Thursday they turned a second one around. And that seemed to indicate that something was up, because the reaction by the Tijuana citizens has been very, very loud, very, very clear, that they're not happy with these folks landing there. Now, the caravans have been, you know, anyone who thinks that they're not politically motivated and well planned, it's, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. These folks ended up going to Tijuana because they knew that if they came to Texas, they would not get the reception, particularly for sanctuary cities, that they are going to get in California. Jerry Brown and the state of California have made it very, very clear that they're not happy with the troops being at the border, that they're not happy with the Border Patrol taking any kind of initiative. They're not happy with anything that the Trump administration has done to protect, to secure the border. So these folks, whoever was helping these folks knew that it was going to be, you know, that it was a calculated move of them going to Tijuana. Well, I got news for you now that they're going to have to sit and wait for processing. That in effect, I agree 100%. That right there is going to shut down this whole caravan policy, this whole caravan effort.
Right. No, I agree with you, and I think it's, you know, once again, you know, President Trump, and I have to give him credit here. He was firm from day one about this. He said, "This is our policy. We're going to execute this policy." And I think this is a huge victory for him. But I also want to give the López Obrador administration, or the incoming López Obrador administration, some credit, because I think they understand the problem that this could mean. I mean, if you basically turn Mexico into a highway to the United States, not only are you going to get women and children coming over because they're coming over, you're also going to get a lot of bad people who are going to take advantage of this. They're going to take advantage of the chaos. And some of these bad people are going to be in Mexico, and they may stay in Mexico. So I think Mexico is looking at the big picture here, saying, you know what? No, this is not what we want, George.
That's exactly right. I mean, the López Obrador, like you said, has been very, very pragmatic. He may be considered a radical. He may be considered a leftist. But he's very, very practical. He knows politics. And he knows the destabilization that could happen if you get all these people just sitting on your side of the border, waiting for entry into the United States, waiting for entry that might not ever happen. What do you do, if they don't get in? What do you do with them then? And it's been very, very apparent that a lot of these folks are not going to get in. That some of these folks, just because they claim, asylum based on poverty, they definitely are not going to get in. And so, what is Mexico going to do with them then?
Right.
They've got 6,000 to 10,000, depending on who you talk to, already, with more that we're planning to come. You know, what are they going to do with these people?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's it. That's why we'll believe it 100% when they officially announce it. But it sure looks to me like this is the way it's going to be. And the policy is called Remain in Mexico. And I think it's a huge victory. Victory for President Trump. I really do. I wonder if a judge in San Francisco is going to say that this is illegal.
We shall wait and see on that one, because that seems to be very, very popular when something like that happens.
It sure is. Anytime that, every day that President Trump wakes up, there's a judge in San Francisco looking for a way of writing an opinion about him. But this is, of course, a judge, I mean, you never know. A judge will probably write an opinion about this. But I think Mr. Trump is doing the right thing here, and I think he's demonstrating, I think, showing some real leadership, really. That's what I think more than anything else. He's really showing some leadership. Well, let's talk a little bit, George, about this day 55 years ago. The day that that Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, right there in, on national TV. But you were telling me an interesting story off the phone earlier that your mom and dad had taken you to see President Kennedy in San Antonio. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was 11 years old at that point. And, you know, that's an age when you're bridging that whole innocence mm-hmm. of youthfulness of childhood mm-hmm. into you know, your teenage years. And, you know, my dad being having worked in the newspaper industry, of course, you know, we were very much aware of public affairs at the dinner table constantly. So when mm-hmm. President Kennedy was going to come to San Antonio, he was going to come to Texas and to San Antonio, it was a big deal. It was a very, very big deal. My dad was working at that point for a newspaper publisher in South Texas who published the newspapers for about six different communities in South Texas, and he was a very, very powerful publisher. He knew the Connollys personally. In fact, I've got pictures of me when I was young, when I was little, with Nellie Connolly and with the governor at that point. So our connection to the Connollys was very, very intimate. So the Kennedys coming to San Antonio was a big, big deal, and my parents took me to the parade route, and because of the connections that my dad had with the publisher, we got some front row seats. And I mean, I was close enough. I mean, I was almost I was close enough to almost touch Jackie and the president when they drove by, and they drove by very, very slow. They mm-hmm. waved at the publisher. They waved at my dad, and I mean, it was very, very, you know, it was a very, very intimate moment that was very, very thrilling. I mean, very comparable to me, you know. Just it was a thrill. It was the major thrill of my life. I remember.
Right. Now that would have been the 21st of November.
That would have been
the 21st. Yeah. That's right. The 21st, he was down in San Antonio, yeah.
Right. I had gotten out of school for that event, and, you know, mm-hmm. picture that now, the emotional high. Imagine the emotional high the next day when we're sitting there at right after lunch. We're sitting there at school, and the announcement comes over that the president has been shot. I mean, we're floored.
Yeah. It must have been.
It was incredible. It was just incredible.
Yeah, it had to be.
For a while, I just could not believe it. You know, I could not believe it.
Yeah, no, it had to be. I was, you know, we were in Cuba at the time, and I don't remember exactly. We were at home, and I don't remember if we were at home from school or maybe off school. I don't quite remember that part of the story. I'll have to ask my mom. But the phone rang. My mom picked it up, and then she you know, says, "Oigo," which is what Cubans usually say rather than hello. And then she just looks at all of us and says, "Mataron a Kennedy," saying they've killed Kennedy. Exactly when that call was made, I don't know. I don't think it was right at – it was probably maybe an hour, hour and a half after the actual shooting. But nevertheless, people began to panic a little bit because no one really thought what was going to happen next. It wasn't so much – you know, talking to my dad later, he said that people weren't they weren't necessarily thinking of a nuclear war because they never really thought it was the Soviet Union who did it. So they weren't putting it in those terms. But what many Cubans thought would happen was that President Johnson, now president, would actually blame it on Castro and invade Cuba. That's what was going around a lot you know, there was talk that Castro may have been involved in it or whatever, you know. So that was the concern. And there was also another concern, George, that Castro would overreact for fears that the country is going to be invaded and start locking up people and maybe shutting down the airports. So, I mean, let's put it this way. The 24 hours or 48 hours after the Kennedy assassination, this is before Jack Ruby, right after the Kennedy assassination were, let's say, 24, 48 hours of tremendous tension in Cuba. And that's what my dad relates to me. My late father used to tell me whenever we would speak about this moment, George.
That's very, very interesting. I mean, you know, I got the American and Texan perspective, but I it's really interesting to hear the international perspective from your point of view. I mean, for us, you know, again, it was very emotional being at school and hearing about it and just being in shock. You know, we had teachers that immediately began to cry. Which in today's world would have, you know, there would have been absolute, freaking out because, you know, they would have put us in safe places, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, we were told there was a discussion, a lengthy discussion for about a couple of hours about the president and his death from what we knew about it. I remember the teachers repeating that everything was going to be okay, that we had a constitution, that everything was going to be okay. I remember them. So when I got home, I was just, you know, I was in shock, but I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't frightened at that point. When I got home, my parents were very, my dad got home from work later that day, but my mom had been crying. It was a very, very sad point now.
Right.
That transitioned into absolute panic and fear when 2 days later we're sitting there, literally, I was watching TV live with my sister and my mom, and I believe this was on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. We sitting there and all of a sudden, they're bringing They're bringing Oswald.
Yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah.
They're bringing him through the tunnel, and all of a sudden, Jack Ruby jumps out from nowhere and shoots him. And you hear the gunfire. You see the shooting. I've never seen somebody murdered in person.
Right.
And it was frightening. That part was frightening.
Right. Well, that's the part that, you know, that I think maybe almost, it was almost like, you know, they talk about earthquakes and they talk about the aftershocks. You know, they talk about, you know, I remember that when they had that big earthquake in Mexico City in 1985, that the first earthquake was pretty frightening. But then there was like what they call aftershocks and people really running out of their buildings just because it was a small aftershock, just the shock of the fear. And I think that's what the Ruby or the Lee Harvey Oswald killing must have done to people. I mean, they're sitting there in shock already from the assassination, and now all of a sudden, the unbelievable. You know, who could have possibly believed that something like that was going to happen, George? George, let me take a little break, and then I want to talk a little bit more about this Jack Ruby part of the story, which is, of course, a huge part of what happened 55 years ago this week. Let's hear from my friend Carlos.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' schedule on the show information right there under the show description. We also have a link to my friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer in Central Texas. If you're looking for a car, give him a call. He'll, I'm sure, give you a very good deal. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez. We're looking back 55 years ago today now. Of course, President Kennedy would have been killed on the 22nd, so that was 48 hours before. But now, as George was saying, the entire country is watching. You know, the only thing that was on television that day was the news. There were three channels back then. It's a totally different story than it is now. And here they're moving Lee Harvey Oswald, and Jack Ruby steps up and shoots him. I did not see that, George. That's another difference in our story. I didn't see that. In fact, it was my dad who told me that hours later, that he had heard it on the Spanish service of the Voice of America. But that had to be, I cannot even imagine what must have gone through your dad's mind or your mom's mind. Because if killing President Kennedy was outside of the realm of possibility, this one, this one was really this was a shocker, George.
It really was. I mean, it was stunning. It was shocking. It was absolute. This is when really the conspiracies just began mm-hmm. to float. I mean, just fly.
Yes.
And then the fact that it happened in Texas again. It was just incredible. Watching it live, I think, was shock, big shock number one. That was the watching it live. I mean, here the United States was. Here our society television was still in its infancy, and mm-hmm. to a large degree. I mean. We had the first presidential debate on television between Nixon and Kennedy. So it was, mm-hmm. it was very, very much in its infancy. And then here, this was reality TV on steroids. I mean, this was reality TV in its
yeah.
And it was very, very frightening, particularly when, I think to a large degree what happens now because of delayed TV and radio.
Mm-hmm.
They have learned from this experience, but in those days, everything was very, very live. I remember the person that was narrating it, and I don't know who it was, but the person that was narrating was just in shock as the shooting took place. So it was very, very frightening. It was very, very frightening to us, to me in particular. I mean, I know that my parents, quickly tried to comfort me, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. I was,
nobody did.
Murdered.
Yeah, nobody did. I mean, this was like, this was so outside the, as they like to say, this was so outside the box.
That's right.
This would be like being in right field and the batter's box is over here. This is so outside the batter's box, so outside the box. That there's just no way to explain it. I mean, Jack Ruby, the obvious question, let me tell you what a lot of people, you're right about the conspiracies, because that's what my dad was telling me people were talking about back then, that this was...
Immediately,
that they were trying to kill, Oswald, they were basically trying
shut
to
him up.
Shut him down. Yeah, basically shut him up. And that, of course, I think more than anything else, that has been the key to all these conspiracies, I really do. I think that's what got all of them started. Without that that shooting, had Lee Harvey Oswald been put on trial and so on, my guess is that we would have concluded that he did it, and then he would have gone to jail or whatever for doing it, or death penalty, whatever the outcome was. But by taking Lee Harvey Oswald out of the picture 48 hours after the assassination, I think that, you couldn't even make that up, and you couldn't even make that up in a mystery novel, George.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly. I mean, I the shock wore off about 24 hours later, and I remember that's when everything began to just really, really begin to whirl. The discussions. I remember the adult discussions. Were constantly. My dad took me to go get a haircut the afternoon on Wednesday later that week, and I remember very, very clearly everybody at the barbershop was talking about how it was a conspiracy. They wanted to know, and mm-hmm. I remember the outrageousness when everybody in shock and dismay when somebody actually suggested that maybe Lyndon Johnson had something to do with it. Oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was, It was, and you're right. I mean, had Lee Harvey Oswald lived, you know, there would have been a trial, there would have been closure. But in this situation, there's never been closure, and I don't think that there ever will be.
No, and you know, of course, the question is, why did you know, Jack Ruby do it? His explanation was that he didn't want, as I understand, was that he didn't want Jackie Kennedy to come here for a trial. That's kind of the explanation. But the interesting thing, though, George, is that that's what he took to his grave. He never changed his story. He died only 4 years after. I mean, that's the amazing thing, too. Jack Ruby died in 1967. So, I mean, you know, and that, of course, raised all kinds of conspiracies, too. I remember hearing that he had been injected or something, which is not true.
Right.
He died of cancer.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because about 20 years ago, there was a gentleman who came to the Rotary Club that I was a member of. And he spoke about, he apparently had worked in the Dallas City Jail where Ruby was detained, or whatever the jail that Ruby was in. I'm not sure it was a simple jail here. I'm sure he was in a more maximum security prison. But anyway, this man had been with Ruby in the last year or so of his life as a chaplain at the jail. And, you know, he says Ruby never changed his position. He never confessed at the last minute anything. He never spoke. He died basically telling the same story he told from day one, that he shot him to protect Jackie Kennedy, that he was angry at him for killing Jack Kennedy. So that's really the best we know. And I guess, you know, whether there's a different story, George, I don't think so. I'm inclined to think that the way it happened is the way it happened, George.
Well, unfortunately, we have got a generation that's grown up on Oliver Stone and the film industry. Oliver Stone did a movie back in 1991 called JFK, mm-hmm. and he parades the entire scenario. He threw mm-hmm. in there every single one of the conspiracy theories, every single one of them. And the conspiracy theories are paraded on there like, you know, they're fact. I think a lot of people have seen it and have come to the conclusion that that's more reality than it is, you know, than it is fantasy and, mm-hmm. you know, supposition. And, you know, it's kind of sad, but, you know, that's what's happened. And, you know, we've got to deal with it at this point.
Right. No, and that movie by Oliver Stone is so, it's so bad, really, from a factual standpoint. I remember watching that movie, and there's a little story in that movie that the telephones basically didn't work in Washington for like hours after the assassination. The implication was that, you know, they were trying to control the story, and Sam Donaldson was on television without Oliver Stone, and Sam Donaldson said to Oliver Stone, "Mr. Stone, I was in Washington at that moment, and I was on the phone with people. So what phones were shut down?" And that was just one of many, many idiotic things that Oliver Stone promoted. The problem is, you're right. That's how a lot of people get their story of the Kennedy assassination, just like a lot of people get their story, their history of Cuba from Godfather 2. And unfortunately, that's not true either. What happened in Godfather 2 did not really happen. I mean, that's a great fiction movie, but not a very good...
You mean Fredo wasn't there?
Well, he may have been there. Fredo may have been there, but people were not running to their boats after Batista left the country. And you know, all that stuff depicted in that movie did not really happen. In fact, most Batista didn't tell anybody he was leaving. He just picked up and left. But that's for another show, George. But I think your larger point is correct, though, that... You know, a lot of people have grown up watching these movies, and the JFK movie, of course, has an unfortunate influence. Well, one last point that I wanted to make, George, and that is, it's been 55 years, and we are basically now running out of people who have stories about this day like you and I do, and you and I were kids. So it's the adults, the people who were 25, 30 years old when this happened, a lot of them are pretty old, or some have already left us. And I was thinking in terms of a timeline, George, if you just think about it, 55 years would have been 1920, meaning 55 years after the assassination of President Lincoln. So 55 years is a long time, and I'm just wondering how many more people are even going to talk about this, George. I mean, 5 years from now, when it's 60, it'll be very. I wonder if anybody will even remember it, George. What do you think?
I do too. It is on, the History Channel. Every time I see the film, the footage of Jack Ruby shooting Oswald. In fact, I still even now get a little bit of the ting up my spine, and makes my hair stand on end. I remember it very, very clear, and remember the feelings. However, I think that because of reality TV, and because there is so much TV, we've got a lot of folks, that this thing is just disappearing to the memory of time, and it's disappearing and it's fading away, and reality. What it was really truly like, the other moment that really stands out watching it was little John F.K., JFK, little John Jr. saluting the flag. I remember that.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I remember my parents that brought them to tears completely and totally
right. When
we saw that in person.
Let me just briefly mention something. Forgive me. But I heard that on the radio. See, we were sitting in our living room in Cuba, listening to the Kennedy funeral on Voice of America, and it was being broadcast over Voice of America. And I remember the little boy in that scene, and I had never seen the picture. I just remember hearing it on the radio and my parents talking about it. And then when we came to the United States and I saw the picture a year later. That's the first time I had seen the picture of the little John. I didn't even know what John looked like. I mean, I didn't know what he looked like because I had never really seen a picture of him before. But, the idea of the little boy saluting, that was in my mind from a radio broadcast, which is interesting, very different than yours, of course, George.
Yeah, it was a very poignant moment, very, very poignant moment. And, the stoicness of Jackie through the whole thing.
Yes.
She carried herself so well through that whole thing. You never saw her.
She sure did.
I was used to Latino funerals where somebody passes out or screams and
right,
yells.
Right.
And this was just not, this she was just very, very proper. She was just, she shouldered the nation in her grief. And those things, I think, are just not going to be appreciated anymore that much. I mean, this is just going to be history.
Yeah.
And it's, I had an uncle that died in Pearl Harbor, but Pearl Harbor really has never meant what it did to my brothers and sisters who were 5 years old when it happened and when they were told that my uncle had been killed. I mean, that was something, I did not have the appreciation. I think that's what's happening now, unfortunately. It's being reduced to memory. It's fading.
Well, that's it. I mean, George, it becomes a footnote. It's no longer a memory. Now it's something that comes up, and on this day in history, on this day in history, Kennedy was killed. That's the way I think most people are going to view it from this point on, and much the same way, to be honest with you, that we if I see something that says, on this day in history, FDR died, or on this day in history, Garfield was shot, and on this day in history, McKinley was shot. There's no emotional attachment other than a historical interest. And
yeah,
I think
we're
at that point right now. We're almost turning the corner that this becomes a historical incident rather than the emotional interest that it was for your parents and for you as well and for me, because we associate all of this with other things, at least in my case, with other things that were going on. So it's just one of those things that is very interesting. But I just don't think that it's going to be, we had this big celebration in Dallas, George, for the 50th anniversary, 2013. And I remember that. There were parades, and, I thought the city of Dallas did a very nice job remembering the 50th anniversary and so on. And I said to myself back then, as I was having some coffee, and I said, this is it. This is the last big one. that will ever be done. This is it. This is, there won't be any more big celebrations after this. Because, you know, after you go 50, people, the people who remember, they start fading away or they start dying, George, and that's just the reality. You mentioned Pearl Harbor. Yeah, how many people actually remember Pearl Harbor?
Exactly. Well, exactly.
Yeah, not that many. I mean, not that many. Well, George, as always, it's a real treat to chat with you, and especially on this topic, so interesting today, 55 years ago. And one more point I wanted to make, just very briefly, about that day, and I think Texas was very Democrat at that moment, and it was a different kind of Democrat than the ones that we're watching now. You know, so I think that probably something that I'm sure you're. How long did your father? When did your father pass away?
My dad passed away in 1989.
Okay, so he saw the transition.
He saw the transition from that Texas firsthand.
And even in 1989, it was not as crazy as it is now.
Now
it's just, I mean, it's lunatic, to say the least. Well, George, enjoy the rest of your weekend. You know, we couldn't take any more turkey today, so we had to go cheeseburger tortilla soup. But anyway, enjoy your weekend, and we'll chat soon. If we don't chat, happy Christmas or Merry Christmas. But I have a feeling we're going to chat before Christmas. But anyway, Merry Christmas. I hope so, yes. All right, George. Thank you for your time. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio, talking a little bit about that day 55 years ago when Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, and, of course, 48 hours before President Kennedy had been assassinated. And, you know, I have a post coming out Sunday morning about all of this and my memories of Cuba at that time. Very interesting memories. And it's just, it takes me back, because for us, when I was down in Cuba at that time, for us, it was more than the assassination of President Kennedy and, of course, the incident with Lee Harvey Oswald. Many of us thought that Cuba would be invaded by the United States at that point, because they would blame it on Castro. And then, of course, we thought that Castro would overreact and start putting people in prison and fear for his own survival. So those were the thoughts in my parents' heads, minds, 55 years ago, when we heard about President Kennedy's assassination in a place called Dallas. Little did we know that someday we would live in Dallas. That's another interesting thing. I remember Dallas. Who knew that we would live in Dallas someday? And then, of course, the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, have a great weekend, everybody. Continue your Thanksgiving festivities with a little turkey, maybe, with a little bit more football and just a little bit of family time. That's what it's all about. Monday morning, we get back on the saddle and get back on the routine. But enjoy your family this weekend of Thanksgiving. Bye-bye, everybody. And again, our thanks to George Rodriguez for joining us today. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.